Man, I'll let you take the lead on this if you want to.
Okay. What you were sent is the proposed updates to the zoning law that the planning board spent quite a bit of time on in 2019. There were, as you can see, the document has in red is the I think it's red underlined is the new material, and anything removed has a strike through it. So I hope everyone's had a chance to look at it. The major change is the addition of standards for solar energy development, large scale and small residential scale. That was the big, I guess, the big push on this. But there are a number of other more minor things that got added in. So I don't know the best way to do this. Maybe I could bring a copy up on the screen and sort of scroll down through it and give sort of a brief overview. Would that be
Okay,
good?
can we stop you when we have a question?
Sure.
Okay. All righty, go ahead.
So let me see if I can do this. So hopefully you can see my screen.
Yep.
Okay. So yeah, this was the sort of where the planning board signed off on this. It was around November 25th. And what I'm going to do is scroll down to the allowable use table, which will give us a good idea of some of the changes.
Can I ask a question on page two?
Sure.
You already went by it. I didn't
Yep, I'll go
understand.
back. Okay.
On the accessory structure, the part that's underlined in red, it's in the middle of the, I didn't, accessory structures shall not include temporary construction debris containers or temporary storage units. I didn't understand that.
Yes, that is added in there because part of these changes are new standards on temporary construction debris containers.
Okay.
And we wanted to differentiate them from accessory structures
Okay.
because they have their own set of rules. So hopefully as we go down, we'll hit that.
Okay. Thank
But
you.
that's fine.
Okay. Thank you.
Yep.
Hey, Matt. This is Jim Burness.
Hi, Jim.
Hey, can we go to page three?
Sure. Okay.
Just on that campground, I know we spoke, and I know Paul Gage was there as well. I thought we changed that number, but I didn't see it. I thought we talked about changing two or more cabins to three or more.
Any lot on which you're located, two or more cabins, camping vehicles, tents.
It's really hard as a code enforcement officer to, if somebody has an RV in their yard. They use it according to the rules, but they have their friend come over for one evening, and now it becomes a campground. I just
Yep.
think we talked about that, I believe.
Okay.
And that's why I thought we agreed to three. It maybe just didn't get changed over.
Can I interject something here? Go ahead.
Yes.
I was talking or thinking about this too, is campground definition, and then this is just my opinion. To me, if I have two campers and three tents in my yard, and it's family members and whoever, friends or whatever, spending the weekend or a week or whatever, as long as I'm not collecting a monetary settlement and not collecting any funds or revenue for their purpose of spending the night, to me, that's not a campground. if I have one camper on my property and I'm charging somebody, I don't care if it's 25 or 100 bucks a night to stay there, that's a campground. So that's, I mean, that's just my opinion. That's the way I define a campground. If I got two or three campers, or I got six tents because we're having a family thing for a month or a week or whatever, it's not a campground. I'm not charging anybody to stay there. I'm not collecting no funds, no money. I'm not benefiting from it. To me, that's not a camp. That's not a definition of a campground. That's just my opinion. I don't know what anybody else thinks, but I think unless you're collecting money for it, it shouldn't be determined a campground.
Are you talking about short term, Gary, like a weekend party or?
Nothing permanent. Yeah, no cabins or nothing, but just tents or something. You know, I mean, I've had get-togethers before where I've had five or six tents in the property that I own next to me, and that's not a campground because everybody's staying there just because they attended the party. Nobody's collecting any money. You know what I mean, for the night that they're spending. But if I had three or four, even two tents or whatever, that's door, and I was charging people that were coming up for salmon fishing or anything like that, and I'm charging them 100 bucks a night to stay there, that's a campground. You know what I'm saying?
The other question is, are you talking about like a weekend prior? You call about 2-3 weeks? Because I think the time frame should come into play if you're looking at something like that. And I don't even know who worked on it. I know you guys worked hard on it. But if you're talking about a party for a weekend, Gary, or a week that you're having a family reunion, that's one thing. If you're talking about having them there for the summer, I think that's a little different. Whether you're charging them or not is immaterial. For me.
Most campgrounds are, I think of campgrounds is like any place from, like when we were kids, we went to campgrounds and casters and stuff and everything were just small backwoods campgrounds, but they were collecting money. You had to pay to stay there. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Yep. And there are standards for having what's something that's under a campground, having like family come and stay. There is a section that sort of deals with that and allowable time frames.
Right. Okay. What I've ran into, is, you know, these big lots that people buy, you know, the 40-acre lots to go hunting, and they put two or three of their buddies together to go hunting. I actually have to go cite them for running a campground because they have two or more. Those are the type of things where, you know, it's all season. It's all hunting season or fishing season. And currently with the current codes, the zoning laws, I have to cite them for having a campground. So that's one of my problems.
Yeah, I don't see where that should be as campgrounds. That's my opinion.
Yep.
But like I said, Gary, you don't want five of these RVs sitting next to you on an empty lot. You know, so you have to come up with a number.
Yeah, I mean, if they come up and they're going hunting and they have them there for, I don't know, however long the hunting season is, whatever, and they're removed, you know, fine, but if you got a piece of property and like, okay, I got a hunting camp, I only use it so many weeks out of the year, but yet the camper is still sitting there 365 days, then yeah, there's some kind of permit or something or anything like that that should be.
And should currently be with the current zoning laws, you can only stay in an occupied camper for 30 days.
Is it?
Yeah, and it's hard for me to distinguish 30 days. Right. But to me, it's every other weekend, you know, something like that. But
yeah, I mean, is it consecutive days or is it 30 days?
30 days in the calendar year, I believe.
Calendar year.
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
So it's really hard. And then, like I said, I've had complaints of a camper alongside the road, and I go and I cite this person for a campground because he has three of them on there, and that alleviates some of that mess. But I just think two was way too restrictive, like you said. And if it's a weekend party, I'm certainly not going to go investigate a weekend party at somebody's house, you know. That's where it comes into, you know, the code enforcement officer has a little leeway. It's like writing a speeding ticket to somebody, you know, they have leeway each way.
Yeah, right. I always get it. They never don't give it to me. Okay, so you're asking if you want them, the Paul Gage and Matt, to change it to three. That's better for you as the code enforcement officer?
Whatever you guys decide, I just thought two was too restrictive. And I know Paul Gage was there. I don't know if he's on now. I see him listed, but I can't hear him.
Yeah, three or more would be fine with me. I think that would be perfectly okay.
Okay.
Hear me?
Yep.
I agree with that, yeah.
I mean, or change it, because cabins are more they're not temporary in nature. You can leave the two or more cabins and maybe something come up with a campground for just RVs, you know, they're not permanent structures like a cabin is.
RVs or a tent or something like that.
Right. RVs or a tent are temporary in nature. They're movable. A cabin is not. And that's what I think that campground rule came in, possibly another project that was going on 26 at the time or something.
Right.
So
are you saying leave the two or more for cabins and then correct. Say, or three or more recreational right. camping vehicles?
Yes, or tents or, you know, make that number 3, 4. Whatever number you guys choose. I just wanted to clear that up as, you know, from my standpoint.
Paul Gage and Matt, you guys worked on it.
I'm fine with me.
Hey, Matt. The three, I think, is what we did agree on. It probably got overlooked.
Okay, so we're leaving it located two or more cabins, comma, or three or more recreational camping vehicles or tents. Is that correct?
Yes. Yes.
Or three or more. Okay.
Okay.
Got that one. Okay. Yep. Okay.
Okay. So.
Thank you.
Yep.
You're welcome.
Yep. So I'm going to move down to Schedule A in Article 4. And this is the list of permitted uses. And I'm going to show you some things that were added by the planning board. And one is crematory. That had never been defined before in the zoning.
Yeah.
Funeral home, hotel, and hunting and fishing cabin. And then you see the solar energy system, large and small.
Right.
So those are the new uses that were added, and those are all defined back up in the beginning of the document in the definition section.
Right. Okay. Anybody have a problem with any of that? Guess not. Okay, go ahead, man.
Okay, I'm just scrolling down to section 601. It used to be section 605, but we've done some renumbering with this.
Yep.
And we have the section 601 is the restriction where you can't have more than one single family or two family dwelling on a lot, except in the circumstance where the lot is large enough that you could put two dwellings on and subdivide the lot in the future. You can do that by special use permit. This has been in the zoning law forever, as long as I can remember. But we're adding in that the red type there, that the special use permit expires after 5 years. So you're allowing this for 5 years. I guess this has been a bit of an issue in the town, and that's why the planning board wanted to change it.
Okay. Okay. Anybody have a problem with that?
How would you, now if you got, let's see, for issue allowance of maximum two family or dwellings on a single lot, okay, so if you got a two family dwelling on a lot, I mean, how, after 5 years, what are you supposed to do, tear one down or, I mean, most of these dwellings would probably be permanent structures, correct?
Yep, it would be permanent, but this would require the landowner to actually subdivide the land.
Okay, so I mean, all right.
Yep, so you're giving them a break for 5 years saying you don't have to subdivide. You can have the two buildings on one lot, but after 5 years, you've got to go through the actual subdivision procedure process.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay. Accessory structures, you know, things like garages and outbuildings and whatnot. Adding a number six here that says there shall be a maximum of three on any lot. So you can have three small accessory outbuilding structures.
Where before, yeah, I don't like
that was unlimited.
I don't like that. I don't. I think if you got, I got almost 10 acres. If I want to put four or five buildings on my property, I should be allowed to. You know, I mean, these Amish are pumping them out like hot water, and you know what I mean? As long as they're not, you know, I mean, there should be some stipulations about it, but I don't think after I buy a piece of property and paying thousands of dollars of taxes, I should be told how many structures I can keep on my piece of property. I'm going to be taxed for each one, so what really difference within reason does it make to the town?
There's two different kinds of structures, right, guys? I'm trying to find it here.
Can I also ask what is the purpose of this maximum of three accessory structures? I tend to agree with Gary.
Yeah, I'll. From what I recall from the discussions, there were some issues of properties where these were just accumulating. And if Jim or Paul recalls that, but I think that's kind of where this came from.
I don't believe, Paul. I don't believe that there's been, you say, okay, say if you had a couple of properties where they were, I don't know if you'd call it abusing, but had, you know, an issue with a lot of buildings or like that. I don't believe setting something like this for every single resident of the town is the answer. I think sometimes once in a while, individual situations have to be handled individually. And I don't think, you know, because one kid's mouthy in class, you punish the whole class. I don't believe that.
Hi, Matt.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, we discussed that because there are residents where they have, they pile the tool sheds one on top of the other. And I figure as with anything else in zoning, that could be very easily handled by the by our code officer. I think that's the way the board was feeling on that.
Can't hear you.
I didn't hear half of what you said. Your tone went down.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's okay.
Better.
No, okay. What I was saying is that the reason we put that in there is because there's places in the town that have three and four tool sheds right now, which are crowded together. With anything else in zoning, if there's a variance needed, it can go to the ZBA, or it could probably be at the discretion of the code officer. We have to have a starting point to go from, I believe.
Right. If I can interject, I thought three was a little small. You know, I mean, if somebody was next door to you and you had 10 of these little sheds, that might be excessive. But once again, that a number has to be somewhere so that, you know, you're not living next door to, you know, the person that has 10 of these or 20 of these. There's got to be a number that's a nice number.
Well, what's so a nice higher, number?
A higher number.
You know, I mean, that, like I said, that's up to the board, I think. You know,
I think maybe if they put on there, so you can have only so many structures of that sort
on per acre
area of property, this amount of property, you know what I'm saying?
Right. Like I said, per half acre, you could possibly do that. Is that correct, Matt?
Sure. You could tie it to its some kind of density.
Yeah. That makes sense.
Okay, so redo that sentence, Matt. There should be a maximum of what?
Oh, you could say a maximum of three per acre.
Per acre instead of on any lot?
Yes.
I mean, I would even, there's a lot of one, every lot that has to be, you know, made or formed now has to have an acre and a half. And so now you increase that. I think a nice number would be 4 or even 5 per 1.5 acres. So that would encompass some of these, you know, acre and a half lots that are being formed now.
Okay, so what do you think, guys? 4 or 5 per 1.5 acres?
What's considered a lot? What's considered a lot?
In order to build a home, you have to have an acre and a half.
Okay. Is that considered a lot? Is that the definition of a lot?
Lot is defined in the zoning law. If we go back to, let's see here. Lot is defined as a parcel of land that consists of one or more contiguous lots of record. The public, private road right-of-way or municipal boundary divides a parcel of land otherwise characterized as a lot by this definition, then the land on either side of this division shall constitute a separate lot.
Good, but it doesn't, a lot is what, like, well, Jim said, 1.5 acres to build. But yes. Okay, say you got 10 acres of property. Is that one lot? Or is that 10 lots?
Yep. If that's, you know, if that's a contiguous piece of land described in a deed, and then that would be a lot, even if it's 10 acres.
Okay, so if you're going to go with these structures, you could put on there 3 maximum in, or 4, whatever, in the acre or acre and a half, whatever Jim was saying there. But you got to leave out the word lot, because somebody with 10 acres is not going to sit there and be limited to 4 structures on their 10 acres. That's not right.
Okay.
Well, if you said like 4 per acre and they had 10 acres, then they could do 40.
Right. Just have to leave the word lot out of there. Yeah.
Okay.
But is it an acre or an acre and a half, as Jim was pointing out?
Well, it would probably be better to do it by acre and a half, since that is your minimum lot size.
Okay, so you want to change it to 4?
4 per 1.5 acres?
Yes. Is that everybody okay with that?
How do you think, Jim?
I mean, right now I see some places with 5 or 6, and that seems a little too much. They can always increase the size of these things too. It doesn't limit the size of them. So they could just build bigger ones and put, you know, a single bigger one on there instead of 4 or 5 little ones, you know?
True.
And that would get them through this. So it's not really restricting them. It's just restricting little tiny ones that they purchase 1 this year and 2 next year. And, you know,
yeah.
And it looks kind of haphazardly on their property. So I think 4 would be a good number. 5, if you want to be a little less restrictive. I mean, that's up to you guys, you know.
Yeah, it's ultimately the town board's decision on all this stuff.
So you guys okay with 4 per 1.5 acres?
Yeah. Do you think, Marianne, do you think there should be something in there on, say, if you got 1.5 acres in the country, or you got 1.5 acres in the village? I mean,
this is only town zoning.
Yeah, this is only town.
Okay, I didn't. Okay, all right.
Yeah, but this has nothing to do with agriculture zoning, right? If you're zoned agriculture, that's a lot different.
No, agriculture still has to apply to the zoning rules. They don't have to follow New York State building codes or fire codes, but they must follow zoning rules, correct, Matt?
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So in other words, just because you have an agricultural piece of property doesn't mean you don't have to meet setbacks with your buildings.
Oh, I understand that.
Yep.
I mean,
and that's all part of zoning. So it'd still have to follow these rules unless the property owner decides that it might be too restrictive, and then they could apply for a variance.
That was what I was going to ask, if that was a possibility, for example, with agriculture, to be able to apply for that variance.
Anybody could apply for a variance.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep. Agriculture or any other landowner. Yeah. So you could, if you wanted more, you can apply for an area variance.
Is that something that should be written in here?
Well, that's sort of, Yep, that goes to that goes through the whole document. Any of these things you can apply for a variance from.
Okay.
So are we putting in four per 1.5 acres? Is everybody okay with four?
Yeah.
I don't know where John Dunham is. I think he's here, but I haven't heard from him.
I'm here.
Are you okay with four?
Well, the question is, if you're talking four accessory structure plus your house on an acre and a half, how much is that going to cover up the acre, and how much green space are you going to have?
Depends on the size of the structure.
Well, that's, you got to have something about, are you going to cover up 90% of the green space?
Yeah, but John, in my opinion, I don't believe that should be a responsibility of this town. I mean, we cannot micromanage how many stripes are you going to mow in your front yard. I mean, that's getting a little restricted for a little town out in the country. We can't make it so that people don't want to come here because I have to have 1,500 square foot of grass. I mean, that's kind of like a gated community, and that those kind of restrictions, I don't think we should really go that deep.
Well, because your accessory structures can be any size.
Correct.
You're talking an acre and a half, and you got your septic and you got your well. So you're almost limited how much you can put a set. So you take your house, and then you take your septic, and then you take your well. It's going to be 100 feet away. You haven't got much left.
Well, yeah, but John, can't you put some of these accessory structures that don't have foundations right over the top of some of this?
No, you
know, like all these sheds can go over the top of it.
Yeah, most of your sheds are movable. Most of them are on blocks or beams or something, and they can be moved.
Right. But you're not talking just small sheds. Remember, it says any size other than it's not attached to the main building. So it's a accessory structure. You're going to have two pole barns. That's what I'm saying.
But isn't there zoning for you can't put a pole barn over top of leach field?
No.
I mean, so that's all going to come into play. If you got an acre and a half, you got a septic system on there, then, all those things are going to come into play. You might not be able to, you know, but if you have a place without a septic system and everything and you want to put them on, it should be an option.
So where are we, guys? Are you okay with four accessory structures per 1.5 acre?
What do you think, Jim?
Like I said, all these accessory structures in this new law, I think 25 square feet and above would be called an accessory structure. Four or five, like I said, I want to be a little more lenient with the people than restricting them too much, but I don't want them to be out of control either. So, if you want to have five and you live, you know, out in the country somewhere, nobody sees it, you know,
with five then.
I mean, if we need to get more restrictive, you can always do that in the future, but I don't want to be too restrictive with something like this, you know, I mean, that's just my personal opinion.
I mean, you get out there and you see the places and you know what the people got and what they're building and what they're building on and stuff. Right. So, I mean, if you seem to think, in my opinion, that five would be a good number, I would probably go with that myself.
Yeah. I mean, how does Paul Gage feel from the planning? I mean, I know we've had a little bit more discussion on this. So is Paul still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here. The one thing you have to remember when you're building buildings is that you have impervious surfaces and water has to go somewhere and you could create problems. So not knowing what sizes roofs you have and covering your acre and a half, you could cover the whole acre and a half and have no room for your septic system or anything else. I agree with what John Dunham was saying, that you have to be careful when you're building impervious surfaces. That's where I'm coming from.
Right. And some of these, like I said, most of these little sheds, some aren't little, they're 10 by 20s now. But none of them are really permanent structures. They're all on wood foundations. You know, they come in on roll-off beds and they set on the ground. So the water still is able to permeate, you know, as much as it can around it.
Yeah, there's no footers or concrete.
Right. Yeah, it's not on a slab. Most of them are not on slabs.
Right.
In fact, a lot of them are on, you know, crushed stone, which allows water to really drain well.
I mean, it is, a lot of towns do limit lot coverage. There's like sort of a lot coverage ratio, and they'll say that only, you know, no more than 30% of the lot can be covered by structures or impervious surfaces. I mean, that's something you could add in there to sort of control this, and you can pick, you know, 50%, 30%. But that, I mean, that is one way to sort of solve what John and Paul are talking about, that issue.
And the number of structures. Changing that to a percentage versus the number of accessory structures, is that what you're saying?
You'd have a standard that would apply across the board that would say that any lot can only be 30% covered by structures. Something like that.
Whether it's a single structure or multiple small ones?
Total, yep. That would be like the total coverage can't exceed 35%.
So like what Marianne was saying, you're kind of doing away with a number and just turning it to a general percentage.
Yes, yep.
But then that would allow 10, 6x8 sheds on your lot, which is what I thought the original planning board was trying to stop.
Well, you do both. You would do both.
That's what I'm saying, yes. Both.
You'd have the maximum number, and then you'd have maximum lot coverage percentage.
So there should be a maximum of, I'm going to grab one, 4 accessory building structures on 1.5 acres, only covering max 30% or something like that. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So somebody knew how many square feet or cubic square feet an acre and a half is, okay, and then say you had no more than 5 structures exceeding up to this size, you know, or 1 structure exceeding up to this size to cover no more than 30% of the property.
Of the property, yep.
It's a lot of math, which I'm not real good at.
Yeah, forget it. I didn't either. Yeah. There's square foot over here, and I got a question on that one later, but yeah. Okay, so you know what we're looking for, Matt?
Yes.
Paul, are you okay with that? John, Paul?
Yep. That would work. A percentage. A percentage always does work.
Okay.
And we're saying so five per 1.5 acres.
4. That's what I was just gonna say. Are we going for 5 accessory structures or 4 per 5.5 acres or per 1.5 acres?
I think 5 would probably be a good maximum.
Okay. Yes. Okay. Okay.
Okay, very good. Let's see, moving down here.
On the bottom of page 18, the one that's covering parking, and I know this has been here, parking space dimensions.
Yep.
Each parking space. That number 1. How does that apply to the parking in front of the village gym? An area of 18 feet long by 9 feet wide?
Well, in front of the gym, that's on the street right of way. That's on street parking, right? So that this only applies to off street.
Okay.
And once again, that's in the village.
Okay. Yeah. That's in the village too. Yeah.
That was a pre-existing non-conforming structure.
Okay, so it doesn't apply. Okay, thank you. I wasn't sure.
Mm-hmm.
I forgot it was in the village. Thanks.
Yep.
All right. Okay.
Okay, so going down a couple of little minor changes, changing the name of the parish fire company. We're saying that a slight change. We're allowing accessory apartments to be a little bigger, 750 square feet as opposed to 500, and requiring a site plan approval for those.
Hey, Matt, this is John.
Uh-huh.
Back up there, 610, where you got the planning board may approve by a special permit use and structured location greater than 500 feet from a public road right-of-way upon receipt of a written acknowledgement from the PFC. But I think you go back to the IFC, and then if I think it's appendix A, it gives you all that of 400 feet, and then it's got to have a turnarounds, and then if you're more than that, you're widened to 20 feet, and you got to have a 13.6 high clearance. And we had a couple that did that for us, but it doesn't really need to be from the fire company. It needs to be noted to the fire company from the codes officer. But the code officer has the codes in the fire code. It tells them how wide it's got to be. What you're saying here, they're going to have an 8-foot road going in the woods 400 feet. Well, we can't do that because it's got to be room to turn the trucks around and everything else. You got to have turnarounds after 400 feet. And then if it's longer, it's got to be 20 foot wide. So there's a lot of things that's got to come out of the fire code to go in that section.
Mm-hmm.
Under 610, is that it, Jan, under that 610?
Right, under the 610.
Yeah, we could add in a sentence that, you know, it says, you know, and it also has to meet all the requirements of the International Fire Code.
New York reference State Fire that. Code, yeah.
The New York State Fire Code, which is still the IFC, a lot of it, but yeah.
Okay, so you can work that language up, Paul and yep. Matt, and under 610. So that's got to be revised. Yes?
The okay. Part of the acknowledgement from the fire company, that was back more than 20 years ago because there was a couple of places that went 500 feet back and there was no code at that time of that distance. But now it's all changed.
Okay.
Thanks for catching that.
So do you still want to require the written acknowledgement, or does that not matter anymore?
I don't think it matters as long as it comes from the code officer, and the code officer has to notify the fire company, and they have a right to look at it. It still can be their letter from the fire company, whatever, but the codes and fire have to work together when they get some, because you're going to have some of these that want to go back a mile, I swear.
Yep.
For instance, like where Fredericks used to live, that cabin way in the back, yep. That wasn't even 20 foot wide. I think it was like 8 foot wide road going down through. But he was way back in the woods. And that's what sparked this up. And you have two or three more that have built more than 500 feet in back. So, yeah, it could be leave it right there, a letter from the fire, and because the codes are nullified to fire.
Okay. Okay, so we'll leave that, and then we'll add in must meet all the standards from the code. Okay. Some minor changes here. And then here, this section 618, that's where we're talking about RVs not in a campground, but RVs, just your buddy comes with their RV or your family comes with their RV and puts it on your lot. This is the section that deals with that.
So if they're up for a couple of weeks, do they have to still get a permit? If they just come up to my house for a week or 2 weeks?
Or no, it's 30 days.
Okay, thank you.
Yep, 30 days per calendar year.
Got it, thank you.
And then you can do up to 6 months if you get a temporary special permit.
Okay. Okay.
Correct. And that's only occupied.
Right.
Right. Not just sitting.
Yeah. Yeah. Not just sitting.
Okay.
Correct. You can store 10 of them on your lot currently, as long as there's licensed and, you know, have a plate, you can store 10 of them. You just can't occupy all 10.
So a little, some changes there to the tractor trailers on residential lots. They've got to be registered, inspected, insured.
I do have a question on that.
Okay.
Is there anywhere that defines a tractor trailer?
Oh.
Is that the motorized part or is it the, you know,
there might the trailer not be. Part? Yep, let's look.
I don't see any in the definitions.
Nope, there doesn't appear to be. So we would want to get a definition of tractor trailer.
Yep.
Yeah, because what I'm having a hard time doing is defining whether the tractor trailer is the front part or can you have these containers sitting around that don't have, you know, the engine part of it with it.
Right, the trailer part.
Yeah, and it just says tractor trailers. I don't know, because it says it has to be registered, so I'm not sure which it is. I don't know if Paul Gage could chime in on that.
We could write the definition so that it included either or both, you know, the cab or the trailer part or both.
Matt? Matt?
Yes?
I believe the tractor part, the power unit is
tractor.
Anyways, I think we covered the trailers already under storage units, that you cannot have a trailer in your yard for a storage unit. So if that helps any.
Yeah, you do.
That does ring a bell.
And probably the language you want would be, if you wanted to define it, would be if you have a trailer and a power unit, they must be licensed, inspected, and insured and roadworthy.
Okay. So we just want to change 620?
Yes, that would probably be the easiest way, Matt. Just change it to the power unit and the trailer both have to be licensed and insured.
Do you want to put a definition of a tractor trailer on page 11? As you've got other things, you know the definitions or not? Maybe it's not necessary.
Well, I think pretty much power unit defines that is the tractor. That is a known, what people call them. And of course, the trailer is self-explanatory.
I agree with you 100%, Mr. Gage. I knew that from when I was a kid. I don't know that everybody knows that. So I didn't know if you wanted to define the tractor versus the tractor and the trailer. I know what it is, but I don't know if
everybody else knows. Here's a question. Can you insure just the trailer part of a tractor trailer?
Yeah. There's a lot of companies that have trailers and they're inspected and insured.
Because I know, like,
as we said, you can't.
Right. With a personal vehicle, anything I tow is insured because I'm towing it. That's why I wasn't sure.
Never moved.
No, on commercial vehicles, the trailer has to be licensed and insured. You also have to have a proof of insurance card for the trailer and the power unit. So the whole thing has to be licensed and insured. Because in most companies, as you well know, may have one power unit, but they may have 60 trailers.
Trailers.
Right. And the other thing is, Paul, a lot of these trailers are registered in the state of Maine, the trailer itself.
Yes.
And the truck might be registered in New York State.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So we'll specify the power unit, cab, and the trailer.
Yes.
Ma'am. Yeah, and any trailer is where its main, when it was produced, its main objective was to be towed by a power unit for the purpose of transportation of either equipment or materials.
Right.
Okay.
Right. So and it if it's parked on your property, and it's not, you know, you turn around and go put siding on it and everything else and stuff, well, you're sure not going to tow it down the road at 60 miles an hour. That's for sure. You know, so that shouldn't, in my opinion, shouldn't be allowed. But
yeah, it wouldn't be under this. It would have to be currently used for hauling or transporting.
Now, yeah. My only question is once again, pre-existing non-conforming. So anyone that has them now, they're allowed to keep them. It would just be new ones. Just so people are aware.
That's what I say.
Grandfathered in?
Pretty much, I would assume. Is that correct, Matt?
Yes.
Can you make them put a sign on their grandfathered in so when somebody new comes in and they said, hey, he's got it, we could say, yep, he's been there for 50 years, so, you know. No, huh? Okay, never mind.
But I'm guessing there's only one or maybe two instances of somebody that is grandfathered in the town.
I bet you I have at least five.
Five?
At least. Okay. Because there's nothing I could do about it because it was
nothing
there, you know?
Yep. Oh, well.
Okay.
Okay. So moving down here, dog kennels, we added in that they must be at least 500 feet away from any residence or residentially owned land.
Is there anything with kennels, like how many dogs can you have before you're considered a kennel?
I don't think, let's look at the definition of kennel. Yeah, 8 or more dogs or cats or any combination thereof.
Okay.
Holy cow, 8 and it's not a, okay, never mind.
Yeah.
Yes. 8's a pretty high number, but I think that.
I think so too.
You can change it.
Jim, do we have anybody that has 8 now?
That would be a question for the dog control officer.
Okay. Hey, you got out of that one, Jim.
I honestly don't know. I don't know how many structures are on each property, let alone dogs, you know.
Jeez. Okay, we can ask Jack, I guess.
Yep.
Okay. Next, there's a new section about hunting and fishing cabins, and that the standards are no more than 1 per lot, and they've got to be set back 50 feet from all property lines.
See, and I have a question on that. Okay, again, I'll use my property for an example. I have 10 acres, more than capable of handling 5 or 6 cabins with plenty of distance around each other. But am I considered 1 lot?
1.5 acres is a lot, yep. Right?
Well, that's the minimum lot size, but if you have 10 acres, that's 1 lot. As long as
so on 10 acres I could only put 1 cabin.
Correct. Yep. Under the way this is written now.
I think that should be changed from lot to a certain size of property, like
we did with accessory structures.
Yeah, something like that. Because if I retired, I wanted to put 2 cabins over on my other property there, and you know, for whatever, make you know, get a permit and stuff, and have them for seasonal use.
Right now, it's a campground if it's a cabin.
Right.
More than 1.
Right. So does that change it? I mean, so does that change that you could have 2, but you got to have a campground permit? Even though the cabins would be, you know, well, I mean, cabins could be, you know, Jim, from anything from the ones that Amish drop off and they build and you turn into the cabin that you can move, or something that you build from the ground. You know what I mean?
Right. Cabins are really regulated. It's a weird situation because cabins are only supposed to be used for temporary use with no power, no septic, et cetera. So, and that's, you know, from New York state law.
And this is how we're defining them in the zoning. This is the hunting and fishing cabin on your screen right now, the definition. So it's no public utilities, no power, or telephone, water, or sewer.
Okay, what if you had a cab? What if you had a cabin with no sewer or anything, but it was plumbed into a holding tank that you had pumped out? You didn't have a leach field. You didn't have a. You just had, let's say, a 1,000-gallon holding tank in the ground that they were plumbed to that you had pumped out, but there's no leach field, so it's not a septic system in nature.
Yeah, I think that would come under the hunting and fishing cabin definition.
Okay.
Right. I'm just reading it again because in the town we don't have public utilities for sewer. We only have septic, and I cannot remember what the New York State codes. I believe that's also private sewer, so I don't think that would be a hunting cabin with a private sewer, but I'd have to look.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I think that should have been changed a little bit as well in the verbiage for the definition. Now that I just read it, we don't have public sewer.
Not in the town.
Not in the town. So and when it says public utilities, public utilities would be power only.
Yeah, that's electric.
And public, you know, private would be water and sewer. So it should probably be both.
We live long enough, Jim, it's going to be public.
You might eventually have public water, who knows?
Right, but I think you have to include both right now because it was a really gray area when I was researching it, and I cannot remember for the life of me. Sorry about that.
It's okay.
So what do you mean by, Jim, by including private tools? Explain to me what you're saying.
Because currently, I believe, and I'd have to have the verbiage in front of me, that a hunting cabin cannot use, you know, your own private septic system, your own private well, I don't believe. I'd have to, like I said, research it a little bit more.
Jim, that would be under your U permit, which has no utilities at all.
Right, and it also, like I said, there's also... from the DEC, they have their definition. Like I said, I don't have anything in front of me at home of, you know, a hunting and fishing cabin.
Right.
And New York State has addressed this in a memo, I believe. I just have to, you know, like I said, I don't have it in front of me.
Do you know, Jim, what they're doing with our Christmas company is putting up these hunting cabins on these properties and stuff? Do they have wells? Do they have...
That I'm not aware of.
No, Christmas Associates gets U permits. There's no utilities, nothing. All they have to have is a CO and the smoke detector in them. No water, no septic, no nothing. It's a U permit.
So right. If somebody bought one of those, would they be able to put a well there or no, or what's the deal?
No. That's where the state came in, because I remember Christmas did a lot of them. Different permits I hand them, and it's always U permit. Then the state come out with a definition of U permits. Once you file that U permit, you cannot turn that around and make it a year round with water, sewer, and stuff, because it wasn't designed for it. They don't have regulation in them.
Okay.
We could tweak the definition to be identical to the building code's U building definition. We could try that.
That would work.
You lost me. I don't know where this U thing is in these definitions. Is it under something other than U building?
No, Marianne, that's through New York State. And that
the
is
building code.
Yeah, it's in the building code and how they define what you're building. You know, like a single family home could be an R3.
Okay, but it's not in here. It's not.
No, it's not in there. No, it's in New York State building codes.
Okay, thank you. I was just trying to find it. All right.
We would change the definition in this document to more closely match the building code definition.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, so there's still the question of the one per lot.
Yeah.
I don't know. Somebody say something. No more than one cabin shall be allowed per, you're saying per 1.5 acres, correct?
Per any lot. If it's 5 acres, if it's 10 acres.
Oh, it doesn't matter. Okay.
If it's 40 acres, you can just have one.
Okay.
Yeah, I think the word lot, it should be changed to a certain size of property.
I agree with Gary. That's crazy, one cabin per 10 acres.
Yeah. I mean, if you take and change it to, you know, depending on the size cabin, you can't build, you know, a 1,300 square foot cabin, you know what I'm saying? But, you know, depending on the size of the cabin, like, again, if somebody wanted to put two cabins or three cabins on, they got 5 acres of property, you know, one cabin should, there should be a thing where one cabin takes up so much room. They can't be closer than a certain point, but you know what I'm saying? Kind of got an idea of what I'm saying?
You could say one, yes. One for 5 acres, one for every 5 acres, something like that.
And Matt?
That's kind of high.
You know, yeah. Yes, Paul?
That wouldn't it be best on that to go by whatever the state codes say
I don't think there is. I don't think the building code would have a density limit on that.
Okay. There is not any that I am aware of.
Yeah, that would be more of a zoning controlled by local zoning law.
Right. And once again, remember that by changing one cabin per lot, now you're going to change the definition of a campground as well. Because we just went through that.
That is true, right.
Well, did you say, Jim, like the cabins, so you put a couple cabins on your property, that pretty much goes under because you're charging people to stay there. So that falls under campgrounds, correct? And wouldn't you, isn't there a specification like on the campsites, how close they can be to each other, how big they have to be?
For a campground.
For a campground there is, but once again, we're trying to avoid being labeled as a campground. If you have, you know, more than one cabin. So maybe we could change that definition to have two cabins or, you know, that's up whatever you guys choose on what you want to do with the town.
Right. You could say three or more cabins is a campground, not two or more. Then that would let you have two cabins without being a campground.
Right. And once again, you know, without even going into a lot size. Because I think if you go into a lot size, now you're going to, is that one cabin per this acre and a half, and I have to put another one an acre and a half away, or can I put two in that same acre and a half? And that would just eliminate.
If you were going to put a couple cabins on there, you probably should have them the same distance as the campsites, you know what I'm saying? If they're small cabins.
Right.
But it should be, again, you're going to have to come up with a site plan anyhow, and it's going to be at the discretion of the board to, the planning board or zoning board or whatever, or code enforcement to say, okay, this is sufficient. They're cabins. They're not, you know, but yeah, you can't have, if you're going to have two cabins, you can't have an acre and a half apart. That's for sure.
Right. And that's what I mean. I mean, if you have a 40 acre lot and now you're limited to the lot and you have one on the edge of the property line and it's, you know, thousands of feet away from the other one.
Right.
I don't know how you're going to really, you know, if you have an issue with that. So I don't know how to resolve that one.
I think, like you said, if you have three or more to a per lot.
Now, just remember, we do have acre and a half lots. Do you want three cabins on your neighbor's acre and a half lot? That's going the other way.
Yeah,
that's true. Holy man.
This is complicated stuff.
Yes, and that's why the planning board worked so hard on it for so long. Yeah. All these questions tried to come up, but once again, as you think about it longer and longer, you get more input, you get different people's reactions.
We try not to tie people's hands, but you don't want people to abuse it either.
Correct. So you want to try to be in the middle, and that's the hardest part about it.
And you don't want to tie the planning board's hands or the code officer's hands.
Right.
So what if you said what if you got a lot that consists of three or more acres, you know, then up to two cabins would be allowed per that lot.
What do you think of that, Matt?
You could do that. You know, you could say, yeah, you could have up to two.
On a minimum of 3 acres, yeah.
Right.
How does Paul chime in on that one? Looks like he's on mute.
Well, that's what, like I said, it's to me, it's a little close together, but whatever the board decides, I guess we thought it through as best we could. So I guess that.
What about, like, as Gary had mentioned before, someone's got 10 acres of land. Are we talking 2, 4, 6 cabins on that? Does that then become a campground?
Three or more would now become a campground.
Are you changing the definition on page 3 for campground to 3 instead of 2?
I think that's the gist.
Yes.
Jeez.
So, yeah, you can only have 2. If you have 3, it becomes a campground, and you've got to go through all the campground hoops.
Yeah, that makes sense.
But over here you're saying on a minimum of 3 acres, and over here it's saying on any lot. Is 3 acres going to be the lot under the definition of campground?
Under cabins like that, it should be a minimum of 3 acres.
There isn't any definition for cabin. It's under campground. And I'm looking at that one. It says any lot on which, we already did this one, any lot on which you are located, page 3, two or more cabins or 3 or more recreational camping vehicles or tents of a design or character suitable to seasonal or other more or less temporary living purposes. That's our definition of a campground. Over here you're saying for a fishing and hunting cabin, up to 2 cabins on minimum 3 acres. And you're calling that a cabin. Can't have it both ways, guys.
Well, it's a different. If you have two or less, it's not a campground. If you have 3 or more, it is a campground. So you can have different standards for 2 or less.
So what you're looking at, 2 or more is a campground. Yes?
3 or more would be a campground.
Right.
So we're changing that to 3.
That's what I'm hearing.
Okay. All right. And then the other one is for the cabin is going to be what?
You can have up to 2, but you have to have at least an acre and a half for each.
Right.
Right.
Okay. And a minimum 3 acres. Okay. All right. Yep. These guys, I'm going to get my Baileys out. We keep this up. Okay. So is everybody okay with that? On number 24 for section 622, I think that's where he is, on A.
Just remember, Marianne, the planning board worked many, many nights on this.
Oh, no, and I'm not trying to shortchange them. Please understand that.
Just, they worked hard.
Yeah, and so is Matt and everybody else. It's been a long time in coming. I'm not trying to say it's not, but they're just trying to be a little bit more fair, I guess, or look at it a little differently for the people, I guess.
Well, the thing is, it has to be done correct, or there'd be more litigation than the town can afford to monkey with.
True.
And the thing is, we got to realize too that to generate revenue for the town, also to keep in the back of your mind, we live in a geological area where we have a lot of people that come up for hunting and fishing and recreational activities that look for places to stay. So in the long run, the town makes money off these places too with taxes, and the residents can make a little bit of change themselves if they need, if it's done correctly.
Right.
I'm sure we're not going to do it all correctly, just like the people before you.
Well, that's where you come in, fail. Buddy.
And the people after us.
That's right. Something's going to fail.
Richard said that's why they make erasers.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead, Matt.
Okay, so the next thing is Section 623, transient occupancy. So this is a new thing in there that says that you can only rent accommodations for, you can't rent them for less than 30 consecutive days unless you're a hotel or a bed and breakfast.
I don't understand that. Can you explain that?
This kind of gets to the, and this is something that came out of the planning board's discussions. This gets to like the short-term rental issue. So this would prevent people from renting their house for like a week at a time.
Okay, and the purpose to prevent them from doing that is what?
I believe the thought was just to try to cut down on people coming into the area that are unknown, you know, sort of changing the character of the area where you'd have like, yeah, this is a bigger issue in places like Sylvan Beach, where you have people renting their homes for a weekend or for a week, and a constant changeover of people in the area. I think that's where this came
from. So in other words, we want to isolate ourselves from the rest of the people in the United States.
Possibly, yeah.
I mean, if that doesn't say welcome to Parrish, I don't know what does. Are you kidding me?
So this is, we're talking things like Airbnb with this rule.
Yes.
Yeah. I don't know that I like that.
No, I don't really like it myself because, again, we live in a geological area where some people might want to come up from Binghamton, Virginia or someplace and spend a weekend up here or a week in Parrish and in upstate New York. And we're telling them no because you're a stranger. We're discriminating against you. We got to know you for a while first. That could bring up some lawsuits. I don't think that's proper.
And here you could also play with that number if you wanted to. You know, 30, you could be, it could be less than 30 days. You, I mean,
maybe Paul can chime in on that. I'm not sure. I wasn't there for that discussion.
Well, what's happened in many areas, people are renting their houses. People buy camps on lakes, etc., and or in villages, and their investment properties. They rent them out for a weekend, for 3 days, 4 days. They bring in twice the population that the house should be holding, and they party all night. The neighbors get upset. The police get called, and then all of a sudden a fire starts, and the fire department shows up thinking there's two people in the house, and come to find out there's 18. So therefore, we just lost 16 people in one fire, and that wasn't the fire department's fault. So that is the reason for putting the wording in there, because when these Airbnbs, there is no control over the number of people that show up, the number of cars parked there, or the what goes on with the crowd. So that's why that was.
Why wouldn't you have more of a law of or a zone? Why wouldn't this be more of a, okay, because most of your structures, two bedroom, one bedroom, three bedroom, has pretty much occupancy limits. You know, like you said, if somebody comes up and rents a cabin on a lake or something, which Parrish don't really have to worry about, but other than that, when it brings up 18 people, now there should be a regulation on the number of people that can occupy a dwelling, you know, for a purpose of overnight.
In most places, there's no one to control that. Some towns have gotten it. So now, if you want to have a daily rental or a weekly rental, that you have to have a real estate representative that the fire department or police department could call to know how many people are in there. There are ways around this. Like I said, we look at the possibilities rather than trying to discourage things. We try to take care of what could possibly happen.
Yeah, which makes sense, but I'm looking at it from the aspect of, okay, there's a senior couple or a family, a husband and wife with three kids. They want to come up to upstate New York, and they pick Parrish to stay by Happy Valley or take a trip to Salmon River when they're here. And they want a place to stay for the weekend, a bed and breakfast, or a somebody's house they want to rent maybe for a week where you're not going to have the party or anything and stuff. I mean, we have to leave ourselves open for that instead of just a blanket no. You know what I mean? Maybe we can come up with some stipulations. You can have this, but there's a number and of occupancy people that can occupy given property at one time. You know what I mean?
How does Pulaski handle this issue? Does anybody know?
They have hotels and bed and breakfast.
There are exceptions to this.
Yeah, I don't know if Pulaski. I could look.
Except hotels and bed and breakfast.
Oh yeah, right. That part is.
Yeah, this doesn't count for hotels or bed and breakfasts.
Correct.
But I'm not sure how Pulaski handles.
I know Pulaski allows Airbnbs. I just don't, and of course Pulaski is different. Pulaski is much more centralized. They have the fishermen right there. But Parrish does have the opportunity to be able to take advantage of the fishermen, the snowmobilers, the hunters in an Airbnb setting. I think from a financial aspect, I just don't want to limit residents being able to profit off of the local resources by shutting down the opportunity for Airbnbs entirely.
Well, remember too, that they're in the process with the DEC and stuff of opening up the waterways to where the salmon and stuff could be used in the Little Salmon River. This will bring the fish and stuff into the Parrish area, and we don't want to have stipulations in there. Well, we got the fish, but you ain't staying here for the weekend. You know what I mean? Or you can't rent a place or stay in, you know, so we got to be careful there because, yeah, Pulaski is different because they got the Salmon River right now, but if these things go through with the DC and we get the fish and the breeding grounds and stuff up here for the salmon, well, you're going to want to make that, you know, attractive, if you will, to people coming up here and saying, well, I'm not going to Parrish. I'll go to Pulaski, you know.
Well, look at it this way. It's not going to happen overnight. And this here has got to be redone every 5 years. So you always can change it when that happens. I can't see changing something now when you have nothing to back it up. You do have B&B and you do have the, what used to be a hotel, motel, but it's encouraging to get a hotel and motels in here.
Absolutely. There was times when Pulaski didn't even have motels. A lot of the fishermen come up, they had to sleep in the back of their cars and stuff. So, like I said, it's up to them. We did what we were thinking was best for the community, and if the fishing comes in and the hunting comes in, we lost the Parrish Motel. Maybe we can get one back, right?
Yeah, I agree with Paul.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense.
We can leave it like this for now, and in 5 years, if we're all still here, it may adjust it depending on if the salmon come up the little creek here. Is that everybody okay with that, leaving it as is?
Right. What, once again, a rule like this or a law is very hard to enforce.
Yeah.
Good yes, it is.
Jim won't be part-time anymore. Jim will be full-time plus.
I mean, to prove that they're less than 30 consecutive days, I'd have to prove when they got there and when they left. And by the time it was a week, they'd be gone anyways. I don't know how to prove or disapprove this law at all. Honestly.
Yeah.
Yeah, this is a tough one. It really, you would be notified by somebody complaining about their neighbors doing this. You know,
right.
If you
and so then how do I have to go to the home and?
You would have to do some kind of reconnaissance.
And I'd have to do it 24 hours a day to figure out who was there and who wasn't there. Were they staying overnight? Were they really renting it out? It'd be really hard to enforce, I think. I mean, it's nice that it's written there. It might stop some people from, you know, doing it and following the law. It's just one of those laws that, once again, is really hard to enforce, in my personal opinion.
Yeah, that's what you'd really have to hope is, you know, this would discourage that.
Matt?
Mm-hmm.
One of the things I'm looking at, if you got something like that, wouldn't you have a property manager? If you're going to do this, there should be a property manager, and that application should be left at the codes office so they have somebody to contact if there's a problem with the residents.
You could, you could do something like that. But if you were allowing Airbnbs, you could set up some kind of a system where you have to notify, but you're not, you know, as this is written in 623 here, you're not allowing that for less than 30 consecutive days.
What do other towns do, Matt?
This is a pretty new, some towns have this exact language, some villages, but this, the whole Airbnb phenomena is fairly new as it's being regulated by zoning. But some towns do have towns that allow it, they do have like a registration system where you have to sort of have a license to do this with the town.
I think I have a bed and breakfast. Yeah, I think it wouldn't hurt to register with the town, the size of your place, the occupancy, you know, and you're not to exceed that occupancy.
Yeah, the bed and breakfast is a different, bed and breakfast is a different animal. That requires a zoning permit. So the town, if somebody is doing a bed and breakfast, they should have gotten a zoning permit from Jim.
Yeah, okay.
Okay, so 623 is transient occupancy. We're going to leave it as is. The next one down is 623, and it's crematories.
Oh, that's a numbering error. Okay.
That's okay. That's not a catch.
Yep.
624. Okay. So crematories shall be subject to the following standards.
Yes, that's a new one.
Crematory, are those crematories? I mean, it's where they fry people, right?
Yes.
So, you're going to have those, they got to be located within the cemeteries?
That's as presently written, yes.
Isn't Traub Funeral Home in Central Square, isn't that a crematorium?
I believe it is, yes.
But that's right in the middle of the village there?
Correct, and that's, I think, what they're trying to stop here.
Trying to get away from, yeah.
Yeah, so if you're living next door, like, for instance, the one here in the village, do you want that to happen next door, you know? And I'm just pointing out the village. It could happen in the town as well, but we don't have any funeral homes in the town. But a lot of the funeral homes are starting to do it themselves.
Is there
gotcha.
This is sort of a growing, this is becoming more and more common.
Is there, what is the downside of this? I mean, is there pollution? Is there, isn't there rules and regulations of how they do this and stuff and everything? I mean.
Yeah. Yes.
I'm sure there are, but I think that's, yeah, the downside.
Just let the smoke go up in the air. There's a filtering system and all that good stuff that has to be in place. So, yeah, not like the Indians putting them up on those little things, you know, lighting underneath.
Scriber just had an issue with this, I believe, a couple of years ago. And they had a huge battle.
Where was that?
In Scriba.
Right, yeah. I know the Oswego area. And in the city of Oswego, too, I thought. But maybe I'm thinking of a different thing.
So are we covered with the language that's here so we don't have a problem? A, B, and C? Hello. Am I talking?
You are.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm okay with it. I was just wondering what, like if I had one next door, am I going to be smelling burnt bodies all day, or what's, you know, what's
yes,
the downside
you
of this, you know? You know, I mean, I was just saying what, I was just kind of curious of what the cons were, the pros and cons, what the cons were about it, that people don't want these in the towns or villages, or they're, why there's such an thing on where they are placed. I mean, what is the, what's the downside of having one next to you?
Yeah, maybe first and foremost, property value. Worries about property value is going down just due to the proximity of such a thing.
Oh, okay. All right.
And now with this law, if it's in a cemetery, normally they're pretty wide and expansive, and they're not located next to many neighbors as it is. So if you keep them there, it kind of tends to give you that buffer zone, I believe.
Okay.
Okay.
Yep, next.
Okay, next is the temporary storage. So that talks about construction debris, temporary storage units, those pods type of thing. That you can have those for 30 days without a permit. After 30 days, you've got to get a permit, and some conditions are placed. Maximum time frames, setbacks from lot lines. That's in 1, 2, and 3.
Okay. Okay.
Okay, next is a new section on domestic livestock, on residential. We're talking non-agricultural, but residential land. And this sets some lot sizes. Or minimum, you know, you must have, you got to have at least the 1.5 acres. You've got to have an eighth of an acre for each hoofed livestock, a tenth of an acre for each small poultry, chickens, turkeys, requiring a fenced in containment area. And you're prohibiting the spreading of manure so that it becomes odorous beyond the property boundary. And you're not allowing runoff with sediment and wastes off the property.
Does this apply to horses? No.
This would not apply. Well, let's see.
Yes, it would. It's a hooved livestock.
Yeah, domestic hooved livestock. There are definitions. Yes, horse. Domestic hooved would be cattle, goats, horses, llamas, et cetera, et cetera. And then the fowl would be chickens, ducks, pigeons, rabbits, turkeys.
And that's in the front part. Okay, thank you.
That's in the definition section. So that would apply to horses.
I didn't flip back there. Okay.
50 feet from your property line is quite a distance. Yeah, 50 feet from this side. But I mean, so it's pretty much limiting on what size property you have to have if you want to have a horse or a cow or whatever. That you have to have. I mean, 100 foot from each side of that fence to any surrounding property borderline, correct?
50 feet 50 from
on each side.
Yep.
So it's taking 100 foot of your property that you wouldn't be able to use 50 on each side.
Yep.
Is there a reason why we went 50 and not say like 20, like a building thing is? There's a reason for that?
Maybe Paul can answer that.
This is Diane chiming in, and I think it was because of the odor that would be created from the NOR.
Oh, okay.
Odor, noises, runoff.
Right.
You're giving a little bigger buffer to the neighbors.
I'm good with it.
No problem. Next.
Hi.
Matt?
Yes.
This is Diane. 623 bothers me because in Pierce, there are a lot of older homes in the town and in the village that have maybe empty bedroom space that overnight people could come when snowmobiling or salmon fishing or something. And if you have you can, instead of saying no, I'm thinking of, could you have like A and B, something to relate to the hotel and the bed and breakfast concept. But also B, private homes. And if it were in a private home and I had 4 or 5 bedrooms in my house, then I would register with the town that I was going to have these guests, get a permit from the CEO for X number of days, and that would be a way to supplement my income to pay for the taxes for this big house type of thing.
I agree with that. That sounds good.
Because we try to put everything in that one sentence, no overnight accommodations, feels like I can't have someone come and sleep in my extra bedroom for a week, you know?
Well, that's what we're saying with 623.
Right.
It would have to be at least 30 days.
So can you just make it A and B instead of, just say the title is accommodations for compensation or barter shall be permitted, A and then B, something to that effect.
I agree with that.
Then you're radically changing the whole concept here where you're not allowing, right now you're not allowing that to happen in a private home, but you're saying you want to allow that to happen in a private home.
I think so. If the DEC is going to put salmon fish here, there are already people snowmobiling here. I know people who would like to come here, but they go up to the lodges along Route 13 or whatever it is in Pulaski because there's nothing down here in Parrish. I have my reasons why I know there isn't, but I don't know. I think people in the village and maybe in the town in some of the old farmhouses have space and would like to do that.
This doesn't apply to the villages, remember. This is strictly town.
Just to the town.
Yeah.
I mean, you could apply as a, you could call yourself a bed and breakfast and, get a zoning permit. That would be how you could do that.
That way. Okay.
Let's look at the bed and breakfast definition. An owner-occupied dwelling offering overnight accommodations and a morning meal to transients for compensation.
There you go.
So anybody, if you were wishing to do that, you would just have to get a permit.
This is in a private home, I'm talking.
You'd have to get a site plan review from the planning board.
Your sound has gone like down to almost nothing there, man.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Is that better?
Yes.
Yeah.
We caught you relaxing, Matt. You're too far away.
Yeah. I mean, if you were to get a site plan review from the planning board, then you could do that as a bed and breakfast.
Can we add that to 623? I'm not planning to do it, but somebody might want to if they have a big house to do it.
Well, it is. Yep, 623 doesn't apply to bed and breakfasts.
Correct.
But we could tweak that language a little bit so that, see, it says except in a hotel or a bed and breakfast.
Right.
But we could tweak the language that maybe explains that a little better.
Yeah. I would like that. I don't know. How do other people feel about it?
We would basically want to leave it the way it was because it's not going to apply too much, but till later.
I think you're right that the people, if you had a big farmhouse or something and you wanted to make a little extra income, and like you said, people wanted to come here, yeah, it's makes sense.
Now if I do it, I'm just not going to tell you. I guess that's how I do it.
I heard that. I heard that, Diane.
Right. I know you did. Well, that's how. Why not? I mean, you're not saying I can't, so I guess I can.
Yeah, but they got to be there for 30 days. And, sometimes fish and relatives stink after so many days.
After 3 days, right. Well, think about it. That was just an idea I had because that kind of bothers me a little bit. I'm just looking for another way for people here to make money if they needed it. And they had a big house to pay taxes, whatever.
Appreciate it, Diane.
Yeah, they could do it under the guise of a B&B if they get approval from the planning board.
Okay, I'm done.
Okay, so moving on. We did make some changes to the sign regulations. And these are made, a lot of communities are changing up their sign regulations to because a lot of zoning laws were in conflict with the U.S. Constitution on the freedom of speech, where there's a concept that you can't regulate signs differently by content. You've got to regulate them all the same. So in other words, you can't have one set of standards for this kind of sign that says this message, and then another set of standards for a sign that says another message. You've got to treat all signs the same. So we made the changes to try to do that. And you can see these here where we're talking about temporary signs. We're saying all the temporary signs have a limit of 60 days. Where we used to have different, for all of these different types of signs, I think there were slightly different time periods. So we're trying to.
When I was running for office and we had, they were sitting there saying, well, you had this day to put up your campaign signs and this day to take them down. Well, I did some checking on it. And according to state law, there's no limitations on political signs. So did you check? Did anybody check and see if that was changed? Because the last I knew, there was not.
There are generally for this is under the section temporary signs. So you can have a temporary sign for 60 days without getting a permit. But if you want to have a permanent political sign, you've got to get a permit, just like if you want a permanent commercial sign.
Oh, permanent. Okay. They're not permanent.
No, and it's on page 27 under political signs. It says it shall not exceed 60 days that you put up. If that's what you were looking for, Gary.
If you want,
excuse me. It says not exceed 60 days, just like the rest of them.
If you want a permanent political sign that says some political message, that you're opposed to this or opposed to that or support this party or whatever, you can have that. You just have to get the permit from the town to do it. You'll see that in section 725B. We're saying wording and graphics of non-commercial signs. You can have those, but it's limited to speech that's protected by the First Amendment. So you can't have slanderous, speech or hate speech kind of things. But you, other than that, you can have any political message.
Anything in here that covers defamation of signs? No.
Defamation of signs?
Yeah, defamation. In other words, you put your signs out and some idiot goes up there and does something.
Oh.
You're talking about like vandalism.
Yeah,
yes,
that's...
Thank you.
I think there's already state laws and government laws about anybody. Right. It's a pretty serious crime to mess with any political signs. I know that.
It is? Jeez, I wish I'd known that because some
proposals
did mine last year or two years
definitely.
Ago.
Yeah, mine a couple months about missing too, but yeah.
No, I don't mean missing. I mean something else, but okay. So there's law, huh? Okay, I guess I got to look that one up. Thank you.
Yeah, that
same thing happened to Richard.
That wouldn't be a zoning law, you know, that would be more of a, you know, vandalism, you know.
Criminal law.
Jim, I was trying to give you more work. Okay.
Thanks.
Okay.
Changing the maximum, I think we increased the maximum size of signs to 48 square feet. 48 square feet in the highway commercial and 32 square feet in the other zones.
Okay, I was gonna say 32. Got it. Okay.
It might be 32 now. I think we're increasing it a little bit.
Yep, you got 32 in here. 32, yep. That's not the village though, right? This is just town.
Not the village, just the town, yep.
Okay.
And then we added just some, what you see on the screen, we added some standards about the quality of the sign and the safety issues. That the design can't confuse or distract. You can't make your sign look like a stop sign or a yield sign. You know, it can't confuse motorists. It's got to comply with DOT standards. And then we have a section on LED signs, which are, you know, a relatively new thing that hasn't been addressed in the zoning.
I'm still behind you here. Okay.
That's in number 12 there.
Yep, you got it.
Talking about how frequently the message can change, distance apart for LED signs, hours of operate or dimmed after 10 p.m.
Hey, Matt,
mm-hmm.
I mean, how many times the signs can change and stuff like that? That is, if it's on the state road, that's regulated by the DOT. So like the ones you see on 81, they're all digital and they're changing every so often.
Yeah.
Or 41 or whatever, Route 3 or 69. Those are regulated by the DOT, how many times they can change and how bright.
Okay. So that, yeah, in that cases, in those cases, DOT might override, might be more stringent than what you have here.
Yep.
Whatever the more stringent,
so if you had one up there by the gristmill and it was aimed at the 81, DOT will have regulations on it, what it can do. It's that close to 81. So you don't distract the drivers.
Mm-hmm.
Do we need to put something in here that relates to that? In other words, these are our rules or regs regarding the town. Do we have to put it in there or compliance to DOT regulations or something to that effect?
Well, we do in number 10. If you look at number 10 there, it says all signs shall comply with DOT.
Thank you. I didn't see that. I was looking at A through G. Thank you. Yep. Got it covered. No problem.
Okay. So that's signs. I think the next big thing, adding a little bit about noise there. The next big thing is going to be the solar. So, Article 11, that is, you know, your residential solar panels on the roof, in the backyard, and then your large scale, what you might call a solar farm, your utility scale solar development. So that's a whole section on how that would be regulated in the town.
They came from the state guidelines?
Yes, that came from a few different sources, but basically the NYSERDA model law for the state, they had, NYSERDA made, had a couple model laws, and then this is what some other towns have done. It basically hits, covers all the bases of what the NYSERDA recommends and what other towns have been doing in the area.
Okay.
So that goes through the whole process. You need a special use permit. You've got to do a site plan review. There's minimum setbacks and lot size. It talks about lighting and signage. Trying to avoid having these on prime farmland. You've got to have a property operation and maintenance plan. You've got to have a decommissioning plan for when it goes out of service. So this, yeah, this was many, many, many planning board meetings on this.
Yes.
But almost every town that we work with is going through doing this type of thing right now, because these are popping up all over the place.
And just remember, this is not normally not residential, correct, Matt?
The bulk of this is the commercial. Yep. This article applies to residential, small scale residential, and commercial,
on their house. Not, just so people are aware of that. It's less than 25 kilowatts on their house, and so it doesn't apply to this.
Yes. Yep.
Is it possible, because I don't know a lot about these panels, I know they're only good for so many years. Is it possible when they reach their maximum life that those panels can be replaced, or do they have to be taken and thrown out and it's no good anymore?
Maybe Diane can key in on that. She seems to be up on that. Yeah,
I think they're no good. You have to redo them because it's technology.
Right, but I mean, if I had a bunch of them on my land and my time was up and I decided to continue doing it, if I got rid of the ones I had, can I put new ones in their place?
Yeah, that way. You just can't, I don't think you can repair them because of the technology would be changing.
Okay, but I meant is covered in here that if I wanted to, I could put new ones in and keep going.
Sure.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. Yeah.
Thanks.
Have a question. Does the town still have a moratorium on this, or are we vulnerable to someone coming in here tomorrow and getting a permit to put up a solar farm?
We have not passed the second moratorium. We didn't have a meeting in July when they were supposed to have a public hearing on that, so we now have a public hearing scheduled for September. I look at the calendar, 10th. It's prior to the joint board meeting from 6 to 6:15, and then the other one for the the charter is 6:15 to 6:30. We have to have those public hearings first, Diane, before we can adopt the law, and that's going to be hopefully at the September meeting on the 17th.
And you hope nobody applies for a solar permit.
I'm holding my breath, but there's not a lot I can do.
The members
were not available. They didn't, for whatever reason, we couldn't do. So it stinks.
Okay.
We're still working on it.
Okay, I'm just asking.
I don't blame you. Thank you.
Yep.
Okay, so yeah, this is a lot of material here. I don't know if anybody has any questions or comments. But this is pretty standard to what other towns are adopting.
And Matt said it followed NYSERDA, and NYSERDA has covered about everything they could have. They did a good job.
Great. Well, you guys did too. Appreciate all of this. Holy cow.
It's we try to cover all the bases.
You did a great job. Well, thank you for that. Appreciate it.
So other than that, I think the last, a couple little things here. We're saying now you need a, if you need a zoning permit for anything greater, an accessory structure greater than 25 feet.
Square feet.
It used to be 200, so kind of clamping down on accessory structures a little bit as far as what you need a permit for. Applications for zoning permits must be signed by the property owner, so you don't want like somebody renting property trying to get a zoning permit without the owner's knowledge, just to save headaches there. I think that might be it.
Already?
Yeah, amazing.
Well, you guys spent a lot of time. I know we didn't go through it as long as you did, but you did one hell of a job. Those pieces that you're going to correct now or change, Matt, can you get those to us? I'm trying to think.
Yes.
Baxter, how far out do we have to go before we can do a public hearing for this? How many... In other words, how far out do we have to advertise before we can hold a public hearing?
Well, I'll refer to Matt on that. But
Matt, I'm sorry.
I think it's 10 days. I think you've got to have 10 days notice.
Well, and the thing, too, is since this is a revision to zoning, it's more complicated than just doing a local law.
Right.
There is a notification of adjacent municipalities and the county, and so it gets to be kind of a complicated procedure.
Yeah, The next step after you're happy with this would be to have the town attorney look it over, typically, and okay. then it's got to be sent to the county planning board, and they look it over.
County so planning board.
County planning board, yes. Like it's the 239M review you may have heard of.
Not me. I'm new at this. Planning
board was familiar with that process.
Okay, yeah, I'm sure they are. He'll keep us straight. Okay, and then after that?
Then after you get approval from them, then you have your public hearing, which requires noticing the neighboring municipalities.
Okay, so this isn't something that can be done in the next 2 weeks?
No.
Nope. Okay. No, that was going to be my question because we have a public hearing coming up then, and I just wondered if I could include it. All right. So now what you're going to do is you're going to get us the changes, update it, and then we'll look at it again at the town board meeting, probably on the 17th. And then we go from there. We have to have the town. Well, town attorney's got to look at it first. Hopefully he can review it before the 17th. After that, I'm sorry.
Yes, I could send you down, you know, copies, and if you want to, you know, send a copy to Bob Gannant and have him look it over.
Yes, attorney for the town. Yeah.
And to streamline things a little bit, you can get that in Bob's, once Matt has accomplished those revisions, you could get that in Bob's hands now, so that conceivably at the September meeting, with the concurrence of the attorney, you could make a motion at the September meeting to refer it to the county for review.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Does it take that long? Does it
take like you have to review it and then refer it to Bob and then wait to refer it to the county? You could have Bob taking a look at it now.
Okay. So once he gets the changes in, he'll send it to all of us, including Bob.
Including Bob.
Okay. And then maybe he can give us some direction at this September 17th meeting to refer it to the county planning board. Any idea how long they normally take?
They have up to 30 days.
And usually they've been turning them around quicker than that. They've been very good in recent days.
Yeah.
Okay. In the meantime, we'll have the public hearing for the moratorium on the 10th in hopes of passing that at the planning board, at the meeting, I'm sorry, on the 17th. So that'll be in place to cover us until this comes through. Is that right? Yes. Hello. Yes? No?
Yes, for me.
No, I meant Paul or Matt. Is that correct?
Yes, having the public hearing on the moratorium.
September 10th, right?
Public hearing September 10th, and then we'll vote on the moratorium law and the charter law at the 17th meeting, plus ask for permission to send this to the county planning board. But I meant that
right.
As long as we do the law for the moratorium, that'll at least cover us until we get this guy done regarding the solar panels.
Yes.
Okay. All right, good. Any other questions for Matt or anything, anybody? Suggestions?
Again, thank you, Matt, and thank you, Paul, and everybody for his hard work that you put in on this.
Yeah, the planning board, Diane, all of them.
Dan.
Dan, not Dan. Ben and Kevin and Bill at the planning board. Matt did it, and a lot of people. Jim, I hope I don't leave anybody out. If I do, I apologize, but you guys did a lot of work. Now, a quick question for you, Matt, and I don't mean to put this on you so soon, but where do we stand with the comprehensive plan?
I believe the planning board has copies of the last thing that was ever done, and they may have looked that over at their meeting this past Monday night. Maybe Paul knows.
Yeah, no, they didn't review anything really good in substance pertaining to the comprehensive plan.
But I think that's on there. That's on their list, their to-do list.
Like next or something. Okay. All right. Thank you. I just wondered because it's been a while since we touched on that. Okay. Thank you so much, everybody, for tuning in and chiming in and giving us some suggestions and ideas. We'll get there. I know it takes time. But, guys, thanks for all your hard work and time that you put into this. We appreciate it. The people will appreciate it. That's for sure.
Thank you, Matt.
Yes.
Thank you.
Thanks, everybody. Talk to you on, if not before, we'll talk to you on the 10th.
All right.
Guys. All right.
Take care.
You too. Thank you.
Thank you.